For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Punt Intended podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. I'm your host, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. And speaking of rankings, that gets into our recent trend or topic, and that is that my updated Dynasty rankings have been released post the NBA trade deadline. And we had some time, about a month now, to see the fallout from the trade deadline. It wasn't the craziest trade deadline we've seen, but we did see some role players, some starters move here and there, and that's definitely shaken up some things a little bit. We also had some effects from earlier trades, such as the Emmanuel Quickley trade, the OG Anunoby trade, and the Pascal Siakam trade that also had some trickle-down effects. So all that and more is included in the updates for those Dynasty rankings. That link to see the rankings is in the episode description, so if you want to check it out, feel free to click there. The top 50 are free, but you can see the full top 350 if you get a Sports Ethos subscription. And we have some great deals going on now, so if you like what you see from that top 50, feel free to check out the full top 350 with that subscription. I usually include some, actually with every player, I include some notes on why they're ranked where they are and what I see from that player. So by seeing that top 350, you can really get into the meat of all these depth players. And yes, 350, you might think, okay, well, player 343 probably isn't helping me too much. Maybe that's fair. But when you're in, if you're in 30 team leagues, you tend to care about players in that range. So again, if you like what you see, make sure you get a Sports Ethos subscription today. So getting a little bit into the rankings, I'm going to then talk about how I do my rankings and how I attack them and what I really factor in when making them. I think really the first thing to mention is that when I do my rankings, I tier players together. And I think tiers are insanely useful to help indicate similarity between players and to show that maybe there isn't too much difference in some players, and help stratify different groups of players. So within my tiers, basically, if I have player X and he is my 14th player, and I have player Y, he's my 19th player, but they're both in a tier from 13 to 20, I kind of view those players as relatively close and roughly even value. When we're talking Dynasty and Fantasy, there's so many layers that you can look at, right? Is your team in rebuilding mode? Or is your team trying to push for a championship? If you're pushing for a championship, you're going to value a player like LeBron James over a prospect like Ausar Thompson, for instance, right? So you have to factor that in. Another thing you have to factor in is just the stat set of a player, right? You might have a defensive monster like, oh, let's just say Chet Holmgren, right? Chet Holmgren, not necessarily the highest point scorer, but you know, strong in blocks, get you some steals. Or are you looking for just a pure bucket getter like Albert Shengun, right? Who, yeah, he has some defensive stats, but it's not his forte. That's his points and rebounds and assists and his counting stats. So you have to account for the stat set profile of a player. And then sometimes you have to factor in positional eligibility. Sometimes your teams just have too many centers and you need a guard. And you have to look for a guard maybe in a similar range. You obviously don't want to move a player away at a loss of value. So that's why I use tiers, because there's so many different factors depending on team state. I don't think it's as useful just to say, oh, player X is 30, player Y is 35, therefore give me player X over Y every single time. However, the stratification between those tiers is important, right? So tiers just give, I think, you all a way to view the ranges of players and players that are similar value and kind of bucketing them a little bit. Tiers will get granular as you get down to the list, right? If you get between player 200 and 250, isn't as great as the difference between player 50 and 100, right? But there are still differences between those players, and so tiers will help indicate that. So what do I look at when I'm trying to tier these players, right? One thing I look at is I factor in both the ceiling of a player, but also my projected floor for a player. And there has to be a balance there, right? It is better, I think, to lean towards the ceiling of a player because those high-end outcomes matter a lot more. Let's just say, for argument's sake, you know, I'm looking at a player and I think he's pretty likely to be a top 100 fantasy player, but I think he could blossom into a top 30 fantasy player, top 20 fantasy player, maybe. That top 20 outcome is so much more important from a dynasty team than him not working out, not fully developing, and being a top 100 player. So I'll weigh those high-end outcomes more. But I have to also keep in mind that floor, too. Because if you're not seeing minutes, if you're not seeing your role, if you're not developing into the player that can either, you know, dominate the ball or be this high-usage monster or defensive monster, what have you, your ideal outcome for that player, then you might not see the minutes that you'll need to see that production, right? Kind of simple, but I think we sometimes can overlook it in Dynasty. You have to play minutes to get production. It sounds simple, sounds obvious, and it is a little obvious, but it is important, right? Without minutes, you're not going to see production, and you're just not going to be as useful to me as a player who does see minutes. There are also some stats I value more than others. So in Dynasty Leagues, I mean, you'll usually have about 200 players roster at minimum, I'd say. Most leagues, I say you're looking at 250, 300, 350 rostered. So what stats are more important there for me are points and assists, along with some efficiency. But points and assists, those tend to be the players that are the usage monsters on their team. And usage in itself is kind of a scarcity stat, right? If one player is getting usage, that means other players are not on a team. And to demand that usage, you have to be really one of the top players on your team, or just a shot chunker, but that's usually not the case. And so points assist, you have to have the ball in your hand and do something with the ball in your hand. And I feel like those stats tend to basically directly tie to usage and ability in this on-court playing time and role, and leads to more star slash high-level player outcomes that we kind of touched on earlier. So points assist also tend to dry up a little further as you go down. Again, there's only so many players can have the ball in their hand. There's one ball, only one player can have that ball, right? So points assist, I think, are really valuable. Dry up quickly as you get to, you know, even the 150 range or 100 range. So having those players that can be huge value adds and positive assists are really important to me. And then the pair of that is with efficiency, right? If you're taking a high volume of shots, then you better be efficient with it, or else you're kind of tanking that category for you. I am obviously a little bit lower on efficiency because the week-to-week fluctuation of those stats can definitely vary, right? Someone like Rudy Gobert, right? He is not good at free throws, but it doesn't take him hitting that much more to just be okay in that week and passable. And same can go for field goal percentage, although obviously there's more volume of shots from the field than there is at the line. After I kind of look at those stats, then I'll look at more a mixture of the peripheral stats. And what I mean by that is off-ball stats. Things that don't involve the ball being in your hands. So that's rebounds, blocks, steals. And yes, blocks and steals you are involved in, but it's not something that you're actively doing with the ball in your hands. Can you do enough in those stats to help round out your game? And I think Scotty Barnes is kind of a tier one example of this. And that's not to say he doesn't have the ball in his hands a lot, because he does. But he affects the game in a lot of different ways, racking up those rebounds, becoming a defensive havoc maker and defensive event creator, that he racks up these blocks and steals. And so even if I'm not fully in on his offensive game, which I'm not for the record, I think there's a little bit of work in progress there. I do believe in his fantasy game as being really high-end upside there because of the rebounds, because of the blocks, because of the steals he's getting. So it lets him have a really high floor in a way because he's able to contribute to your fantasy squad in a multitude of ways. So if his offensive game isn't going, hey, You got these rebounds, blocks, and steals to fall back on. And as we get lower in the rankings, it's always a really tough judgment to balance, you know, third, fourth offensive options versus role players versus subpar on-ball players. And that's part of where tiers come into play. Because, hey, if you need points, we can go for someone like a Jordan Clarkson who's going to score a lot. If you need some boards and blocks, you can go for a center like Nick Richards, for instance, right? Who's has this nice, steady backup job. Not exciting, but he'll get you the stats you're looking for. Threes and steals, you can go for one of those threes and steals 3-and-D players, which there are so many of in the league right now, like a Malik Beasley, for instance. So tiers can help balance that out as you get later in the rankings. And that's, I think, where, honestly, some of my toughest decisions come into play is balancing those options and where I project those players. And again, a lot in Dynasty is projection and forecasting, and it's a very inexact science, right? There's so many stats you can look at, so many indicators you can look at, so many scouting notes you can make, but it's projection at the end of the day, and I do my best to try to give you what I think my projection will be and where those players will end up. Now,
without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We'll get into some players who are on the upswing, and we'll have a little bit of a combo guard theme today. And the first player we're going to discuss is Coby White of the Chicago Bulls. He hit on his restricted free agency this past offseason and ended up agreeing to a sort of middling deal, almost a bridge deal, with it being a 3 years, an average of $11 million per year. And that's kind of had me questioning a little bit how much the Bulls believed in him and his role going forward. I thought he showed some interesting shooting metrics in the past, but I wasn't really sold on his on-ball game. And that led me questioning what would his role be in the future. Well, his three-point shooting growth has continued. Both his spot-up and off-the-dribble marks are very pristine, very high percentage. And he's just firing them up, looks very clean off the dribble, and really has me a believer in his shot. And that is definitely here to stay. But I think the added growth that we've really seen that makes me a full believer in him is his passing consistency. And that's now a plus. He is now being trusted to run the offense, get them into sets, run the pick and rolls, initiate the offense, whether it's through some self-scoring or passing. Now, I don't think it's anything complicated. I don't think he's making these crazy passes, getting players open, leading them open. But hey, ball security plus simple effective reads is a pretty good recipe for offensive success. Is he going to be one of the best passers in the NBA? No, I think that would be hyperbolic. But I think having that combination leads me to believe that he could be a nice starting point guard for an NBA team, and maybe better than a nice one. So my question going forward for him is if he can elevate his game further in both the scoring and playmaking, and can he garner enough defensive stats to round out his fantasy game further? So we'll touch on the scoring and playmaking aspects first. Now, I did mention that his ball security and his passing reads are better, but they're more middle of the pack compared to other point guards per cleaningtheglass.com. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? Having average assist percentage and average turnover percentage, it isn't bad, right? It's average. It's literally in the word, average. But is it going to get beyond that? I think it could with more increased reps and more responsibility there, as I think the Bulls are leaning into him as being the guard of the future. And of the now, really, but also of the future going forward. But there is a question of how much can it grow, right? Touching on defensive stats, I think he is doing better on his off-ball coverage and jumping some of these passing lanes. Obviously, he's probably learning from the best in the game at it, in Alex Caruso. But Coby White is not going to be some on-ball defensive monster, not some off-ball defensive monster. He's obviously not going to get blocks with his smaller player size. It's just very hard to do. But if he can increase those steals a little bit more and be just more passable there, then that will help round out his game to be more than just a points and assist player in threes. And so that's kind of harkening back to the rankings we talked about earlier. Can he round out those peripheral stats? And I think we're seeing some signs of it. I want to see more, though. And lastly, the, I think, big unresolved question, not just Coby White, but for the Bulls in general, is what is the Zach LaVine situation and the DeMar DeRozan situation? There were rumors that the Bulls were trying to trade away Zach LaVine, and understandably, right? They're a bubble play-in team. Scratch that. They are going to make the play-in. They're a bubble playoff team. And, I mean, Zach LaVine isn't really a player for the future for them, right? He's having these knee injuries, this, I believe, ankle injury, foot injury. So he's on a big contract, still has 3 years plus a player option after that. And yeah, he's just really not a player the Bulls seem to believe in, which I don't blame them for. The question is he going to get traded? Is someone willing to take that chance on Zach LaVine that the Bulls aren't? And obviously, if Zach LaVine's not there, then Coby White is the clear beneficiary. He will have the green light at guard position. There is will not be anyone to challenge him at that spot. And with DeMar DeRozan, he is still looking really good, right? He has been a pretty efficient self-scorer. Numbers have ticked down a little bit, but still impressive. But he obviously is taking away some of the creation duties from Coby White. Now, you could argue that's a positive in the sense that he's still seeing strong usage, even with DeMar DeRozan in town. And he may be taking some of the defensive tension away from Coby White. But he's going to be an unrestricted free agent this offseason. Are the Bulls going to make a move to re-sign DeMar DeRozan or let him walk? I lean towards the Bulls will probably re-sign him. I think that's the cleanest path for DeMar DeRozan as well to earn a nice-sized contract. But it's still an unresolved situation, which leaves Coby White's role a little in flux. Now, that all being said, I think Coby White has clearly shown that he's worthy of the usage he's seeing, worthy of the role he's seeing. So I don't necessarily think this is as big an influence on his dynasty ranking and his stat projection and upside going forward, but it is something that we have to keep in mind. Moving to another combo guard, we're going to go to Colin Sexton of the Utah Jazz. And he's someone in the past we saw have some pretty interesting self-creation numbers and efficiency with the Cavs, but then suffered the Achilles injury and has taken some time to recover. But I think he's looking back to what we saw him at his best. He's just a really damn solid driver, really gets to the rim at ease. He's quick, powerful, yes, smaller frame, but he knows how to use his athletic tools to get to the rim, create rim attacks, and collapse a defense hitting. And somewhat like Coby White, Colin Sexton makes simple reads, but he does leave some of this table as well. He will drive in, collapse that defense, but doesn't necessarily see that pass out or where that defense is sinking in from to then find where the open man is being left. And that's not the easiest thing to do, right? Like, I can't do that, so the fact that Colin Sexton can create that rim, rim pressure is already insanely impressive, right? But there is some untapped room to grow there. So the question is, yes, he can score great by himself. His individual numbers are fantastic. But can he drive a great offense by himself as a lead guard? So I did some digging in on pbpstats.com. And on there, you can mess with some lineup combinations with players to see offensive ratings, defensive ratings, and on-off combinations. So, looked at Colin Sexton plus Lauri Markkanen. They have a 124 offensive rating together, which is really, really good. That's a really good offense. So, what does that look like when you take away Lauri Markkanen and just look at the Colin Sexton minutes? That's a 116 offensive rating. Now, to be clear, that is still very good, right? And anytime you take away a great offensive player like Lauri Markkanen, it's going to affect the offense as a whole, right? That's not me saying that, oh, Colin Sexton is a bad offensive player. No, 116 offensive rating is very strong. And he is the driver of offense when he's on the court. This isn't some other player driving that. So let's take a look at cleaning the glass and look at Colin Sexton's offensive on-off numbers. So when he is, this is basically comparing when he's on the court versus off the court and looking at that offensive rating. For Colin Sexton, that's plus 8.3. That's insane. That was the 95th percentile for players, which is very strong, right? That sounds, wow, he's amazing. Have to keep in mind, though, when he's off the court, the Jazz do have some lesser offensive guard talent. We're talking about players like Chris Dunn and Keontae George, who are both interesting players in their own rights, but obviously they're not positive offensive players yet in the case of Keontae George. Still, that being said, I think it's pretty clear to me that Colin Sexton's individual numbers are very impressive, very efficient with the volume of shots he has, and he is driving good offense. Defensively, he's always going to be small, and that will always be an inherent limitation of his game, right? That said, he competes hard on that end. I don't think he's taking too much off the table, which means that I think he can play in most schemes, right? He probably can't play with another small guard. That's why the Cavs traded him away when they had Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, right? But if he is your sole lead guard, yeah, I think that can work. I think, looking at what we've just talked about, pretty clear that he can be your sole offensive guard, your smallest guard, and you can have a pretty good team. I think that is very fair to say. My larger concern really just be, does he see more six-man minutes and more of that, let's say, 27 to 30 minutes per game role? Or can he get a little bit higher into that bona fide starter minutes with like 31 to 33, 34 range? Granted, both those minutes are going to be more than plenty for Colin Sexton to be a very positive player in points, some assists, and efficiency. And with the volume of shots, he is a positive in both field goal and free throw efficiency. But obviously more minutes, he's going to see the ball more. That's going to be even better for his production. And the second question I have for Colin Sexton going forward is, do other corresponding future Jazz moves affect his playing time? They're sitting on some picks. They have Keontae George in the wings. So do they try to make some moves in free agency, some trades with some of their future assets to maybe upgrade the position? I personally don't think they will. I think it's going to be hard to upgrade enough on Colin Sexton where it's worth it. And he's on a pretty nice deal for them, too. So I think Colin Sexton is actually pretty set in his role in the short and midterm and is definitely worth investing in as a dynasty asset if you are looking for the stats he provides. That is points, efficiency, and some assist. Harkening back again to the dynasty rankings discussion, points, assist, efficiency, hey, those are all things I love. So he was a pretty big riser in my rankings. Let's move to some players on the downswing now. And again, we're going to keep up the combo guard theme here. So the first player we got to discuss is Jordan Poole. Quite simply, he's just been one of the worst offensive players of the year. I don't think I need to harp on the efficiency too much, just because I think it's been a storyline in fantasy a little bit, just how bad Jordan Poole has been there. But the threes being down to 32% on 8.5 attempts per game, yeah, that's a pretty ugly margin, right? The finishing is also poor as well, so it's nothing screaming out to me here that, oh wow, he is just having a down year shooting. It's actually, this is more in line with his career rather than when he broke out in his third season with Golden State two seasons ago. Jordan Poole also had a clear opportunity to at least pass more and increase that passing volume, but that percentage has actually nosedived a lot on the Wizards. Per Cleaning the Glass, his assist rate is down to 18.5% from 23.3% previously, which is a pretty significant drop-off. I know there were some thoughts that, hey, he's going to be in the Wizards. They don't really have any guards besides Tyus Jones. This should lead to Jordan Poole passing more, right? And I thought that would be the case too, just not to a huge extent, but it's been the opposite this year. It is fair to note that his turnover rate has decreased to 12.5% from 14.5%. But also important with that is that his usage is down 3 percentage points as well. So that's kind of a little bit of a trade-off there. And it's hard to speak on any defensive improvement since there really isn't being any played by him. He's basically a traffic cone out there. And I don't necessarily blame him too much for that. Just the Wizards are not a competitive team, and they don't seem like they have a great environment right now. At the same time, you got to do better than what he's doing on defense right now. He's not really racking up anything there for fantasy, which has never been his story. But again, you'd like to see a little bit of those peripheral stats come into play. So you would think he has to see minutes on the team in the short term, and he probably does. But if they were to draft some players with more long-term potential, or just say, hey, he's affecting the team environment too badly, does he have to see those minutes? I think his contract will dictate that he's on the Wizards for probably the next season, 2 years at least, because who wants to trade for that contract? But I think we could also see the chance that his minutes get reduced a little bit more if the Wizards get some players, acquire some players with better future prospects than Poole. That being said, in the bench role recently, over the past couple weeks, he has played better. So maybe just he settles into this gunner role off the bench, which I think he could be good in. I mean, we basically saw that in the Warriors, right? At the same time, that is going to be less minutes for him. It's going to be a little less opportunity. And it seems like that might just be more of a gunner scoring role than a creation role, which means there may not be that potential for assist. So that being said, I think Poole is not going to be this player that we want to invest in too heavily in Dynasty for necessarily a full set of stats. But if you're looking for some decent points, some threes, I think he could be maybe a little bit of a buy low, but he's obviously lower Dynasty ranking-wise than he's been since the beginning of the year. The next player I want to get to is Bradley Beal with the Phoenix Suns. And last week, we touched on some aging players and how their values may not go down as much as we think. And Bradley Beal is kind of a player that could fit that mold, except for the one caveat that I mentioned last week, and that is consistent nagging injuries. And we've seen that with Beal this year. I drafted him in a couple of my redraft leagues, and I have been very disappointed with that. And that has hurt those team's performances a lot. He suffered a back injury early into the year, held him out for quite some time. But then he got back, was ramping up slowly, looked not great. But then he was getting into a groove, right? But again, we saw some injuries crop up again and again. And it's been the story. Dumbo's a nightly check-in for me. Oh, is he healthy? Is he dealing with something? Is he not dealing with something? That being said, I don't think the talent has decreased, right? As we just mentioned, we saw him get into a groove after he came back from his back injury, putting up a nice, 20, 22 points, about 4 boards, 4 to 5 assists, a little bit more per game. And once he ramped up, it was on good efficiency, right? But the injuries here and there just make him less reliable over the course of the season, right? If you're only getting half the games in a season from him, and it's factoring in some of the ramp-up time, and some of those games just might be duds, yeah, I can understand not necessarily wanting him to roster him, right? And it's not just the injury situation, it's a little bit usage as well. I mentioned how once he was getting in that groove, we saw, the low 20s in points per game. Well, that's not as great as it was, right? The Suns also have Devin Booker and Kevin Durant there, who, in their own rights, are very great scorers as well. And Booker is probably a better playmaker than Bradley Beal is as well. I think that's very clear to say. So when you look at the whole package of Bradley Beal, it's hard to see his situation getting better in terms of usage. It's hard to see it getting better in terms of injury, just as he gets aging, as these injuries mount up a little bit and take a toll on his body. And, he's probably going to be on the Suns in the short to midterm as well over the next 2 seasons, based on the contract, based on the Suns going mega all in. So it's hard to see him get to a situation where his usage is going to increase more. So this is a case of a player, an aging player, where he may not hold that value, because the nagging injuries that have just kept popping up and up make him a little too volatile to trust, and puts him, in that hard to trust category. Maybe this is just a player that I've been burned on in my redraft leagues, but I think in Dynasty it's just someone that you have to accept that he is never going to play a full complement of games, and is going to be a player that you are going to struggle to trust week in and week out for what he can give. Lastly, we'll move into our last topic, which is
for the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Teams to watch. The first, yes, I held off on it long enough. We're finally going to talk about the greatest team, the Houston Rockets. And to be clear, I am a fan of the Houston Rockets. That's probably the team I do watch the most. So you might think I have some Homer glasses. It's probably the opposite. I actually criticize my own teams the most. So you might have to take the other grain of salt with that. We got to talk about first Alperen Şengün, who's going to be out most likely the rest of the season with a grade 3 ankle sprain. I am just thankful that it's not anything worse and he can just recover, rest up, and be ready healthy for the next season. And I'll fully admit, I was a doubter on Alperen Şengün. I thought his lateral mobility would be a weakness and his lack of height and leaping ability would be a defensive shortcoming that could be a little too much to overcome. I think it's clear that's not the case, and he can be part of a solid defense. I don't know if he can contribute necessarily to that solid defense as much. I think there are some positives and negatives with that, with him specifically on that end, but he's not taking anything off the table enough, right? Like, the Rockets have been a top 10 defense by most metrics, even with the three-point shooting luck factored in, and Alperen Şengün has been a part of that. And it's also clear that I think he's in worth investing in as an offensive hub for the Rockets. And he's only someone who should get better once the Rockets get better talent. The Rockets have a complete lack of shooting talent, and other teams just really honed in on shutting down Şengün, really collapsing on him with double teams, and making his life really difficult. He can do a better job at feeling those doubles coming, but he's still putting up great stats, great counting stats, great points, field goal percentage efficiency, rebounds, assists, and some stocks just because he knows how to position himself well on the defensive end. So he's someone who has really risen up, and I am now all in on Şengün. Cam Whitmore is another rookie for the Rockets, but he's going to be out 2 to 3 more weeks with an LCL sprain. He's someone who I think has shown to be just a pure bucket getter, is willing to take that shot, willing to drive powerfully to the rim and rise up. Paired with that, though, is he is also willing to take the shots. And that might sound like I just repeated myself. That means he's also not willing to pass. He just does not pass the ball. Even just moving the ball around, he's hesitant on, and sometimes takes a lot of contested shots. And does not pass out at all when he should on when drives, when after he creates an advantage off a ball screen, he prefers to take that shot more than 9 times out of 10, really. So I think it's been really positive in terms of his athletic profile and flashes, but I'm not necessarily saying a on-ball usage monster, maybe more of a points, threes, and boards player here. With these injuries in mind, looks like Amen Thompson is going to get some time to shine. Will he see more usage? Will he see more on-ball reps? A lot of times in the Rockets' offensive structure, he's been relegated to the dunker spot, which he has been impressive, making quick duck-ins, cuts all along the baseline for some impressive finishes at the rim and dunks, but we haven't necessarily seen him run pick and roll too much, bring the ball up the court. I'm hoping we can see that a little more to see that skill set really develop, because that's really where his full upside is. Being this on-ball, offensive, athletic hub who can get to the rim at will and then suck in the defense, make the pass, finish at the rim, that's the fully fledged version of Amen Thompson that I think all of his fantasy managers want to see. Will the shot come around? Work in progress. But I'm hoping we can just see that on-ball reps and see what it looks like in the upcoming weeks here. Jalen Green. I am pretty out on Jalen Green, honestly, but he's been a little more consistent in the past couple weeks. I say a little bit more. That's still not at a point where I want him handling the ball too much on a good team. But can we see some more? He's going to need to score more with Alperen Şengün out. The Rockets are going to need this self-creation that he can provide. So can we see some consistency in his mid-range game and his playmaking? I think his defense has improved this year in terms of attention and effort level, but he is a smaller guard, just like some of the other small combo guards we mentioned earlier in the podcast. But I don't think he's taking away too much on that end either, or enough where it's a glaring issue. So really, with Jalen Green, it's the offensive question marks for me, hoping we can see some consistency. And the last player on the Rockets that we're going to talk about is Jabari Smith Jr. So with Alperen Şengün out, he's actually started at center the past couple games. And this is just part of, I think, the Rockets scheme that Ime Udoka likes to run, which is a switch-heavy system, which does suit our personnel well. So can he survive at center? I mean, he's not playing all his minutes there, right? It's a little bit of a mix and match depending on the matchup. But I think he's shown improved physicality since he came into the league. He's obviously has the length to play center, not necessarily the heft or size, though. But he competes hard. And I'm hoping we can actually see some really ramp up that rebounding effort. So hopefully we can see that, and we can see him maybe even garner some more blocks in this time, playing as that really lone rim-protecting player on the team. So I think the Rockets will be a interesting watch the next couple weeks, if an ugly one. The offense is not going to look pretty. For those of you who don't watch the Rockets too much, the offense is going to bog down. You're going to see some defensive rock fights. That was the case last Tuesday night when the Rockets played the Spurs. The Rockets played the Spurs. It wasn't really a fun watch, but it was an interesting watch, I think. And we can glean some important things for fantasy from them. The next team that I'll be looking out for in the next week or two is the Minnesota Timberwolves. So, with Karl Anthony Towns out, does anyone step up? The obvious candidate is Naz Reid. Can he handle a larger minutes load and offensive responsibility? The Wolves are going to need some scoring. And Naz Reid can definitely fire up the ball and is a pretty strong fluid driver for a player size. But I think my larger questions with him is, can he take on that load for a full starter's level of minutes? And can he hold up defensively enough? He is not the greatest player defensively. Can he be passable next to Rudy Gobert? Can he be passable at that four spot to allow him to play enough minutes offensively? We've seen a lot of times the Wolves prefer to go with Kyle Anderson filling in for Towns at that four spot due to Anderson's improved defensive and passing ability. But if Naz Reid can show himself capable there, not only will he improve his prospects on the Timberwolves, but could improve his prospects for a trade away if the Wolves do go that direction. So I think honing in on Naz Reid and seeing how he holds up, not just on the offensive stats. I think we know at this point he's a good shooter, a good scorer, but can he do the other things that make him worthy of starter level minutes? That's really my question with Naz Reid. I'll also be looking at Jaden McDaniels. Is it time for some more offensive usage to come his way? With Towns out, again, the Wolves are going to need some additional scoring. And we saw some glimpses of that with Jaden McDaniels last year. There was a four-game stretch where Anthony Edwards was out, and Jaden McDaniels was firing away on ball, really showing some craft, some finishing, and some shot-making that I think just gave us a little glimpse into what he could be. But this year, he's been really the fifth offensive option when he's on the court, playing next to Mike Conley, Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, and then Rudy Gobert as a role man. So now with Towns out, will they turn to Jaden McDaniels, give him the ball a little more, and will he do something with that usage? The early returns haven't necessarily looked all that positive, but let's give it another week or two, see what comes out of that. Last player I want to touch on with the Wolves is Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He was this shot-happy player early in his career who just launched, honestly, a lot of ill-advised shots, was really inefficient. And after numerous trades to the Wolves last season, he actually kind of just reinvented himself as this point-of-attack wing defender instead of this shot-happy combo scoring guard. And he looked really good in that role, actually. I thought he did it was really valuable for the Wolves as that wing point of attack defender who doesn't take away too much offensively at the other end. But again, the Wolves are going to need some scoring. Is he going to revert to some shot-happy ways or inefficient play on the court? It's needed, but has it improved in that time in smaller doses? I think we've seen some really positive improvements from him, and I'm actually really in on him as a low-level starting wing, maybe a more a high-end bench rotation wing. But if he can show that he's increased and improved his offensive element of his game, then I think that'll be really positive for his dynasty development and just adding an extra element to his game to round out his game. It's not just being more one-sided on the defensive end. So that will do it for this episode. So just talking about some upcoming items. We're going to keep up the same format through the regular season, discussing, you know, players on the upswing, recent trends, teams to watch. And after the regular season, we'll move to some pre-draft content. We have March Madness starting up here soon, which is always a fun time. And we'll have the draft coming up. So after we kind of get through the regular season, obviously, if there are major storylines in the playoffs, we'll touch on those as well. But then we'll move to some pre-draft scouting, talking about players and where we project to forecast them for NBA draft season. With that in mind, we'll call it a show. Thank y'all.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.